Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a busy Wednesday. Boy, what a guest list we have today live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Today is Wednesday. Herd brought to you by Jersey Mike's Subs. Be a sub above. God, looks like Brady, the Tampa Bay, got everybody signed. Ndamukong Suh is going to sign. Donovan Smith just signed. Everybody. It is amazing about how the cap works. Chicago doesn't pay their quarterback anything, and they had to let go of their best corner. Tampa, let's keep. We have an all-star team. Bring them all in.
People that know how to manipulate that cap there can't be many of them, because it's certain teams that seem to figure this out every single year.
Saints.
And you're like, we all are working with the same numbers, right? Like the Rams, you guys all have to use the same numbers. How do you guys have all these players and nobody else? Some teams can't sign another extension. It's wild.
Green Bay couldn't keep a Pro Bowl center.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they only pay like two guys. It's amazing. And one of those guys is Aaron Rodgers. So I am a big believer in fit. Okay, so Joy and I have bounced around in our careers a lot. And one of the reasons I came to Fox, I thought it was a better fit for me than ESPN. ESPN was very corporate, very Disney, very Lion King, very safe. And I'm kind of a letter rip guy and big opinions, and I have a lot of things I'm doing on the side. And Fox is like, yeah, do your stuff, whatever you want to do, start companies, whatever. And I just thought it was a better fit. Doesn't mean it's a better company, but I do think fit is really important. And I've always said, Aaron Rodgers is a weird fit in Green Bay. So Aaron Rodgers, last year, Green Bay drafts a quarterback in the first round. Translation, we're going to move on here pretty quick. Then Aaron comes out and crushes it, MVP numbers. Aaron's like, you love me, right? See, I'm good. We're still moving on. According to a story yesterday, Green Bay paid Rodgers a $7 million roster bonus. They did not convert it to a signing bonus. Colin, what does that mean? It's confusing. What it means is they can move off Aaron sooner. So they didn't convert it to a signing bonus, meaning they're looking to move off him pretty quick. Now, that sounds counterintuitive, right? Why would you move off? Never forget this. When Green Bay moved off Brett Favre, go look it up. He had just had his best year in a decade. He was a Pro Bowler. They were at 13-3. He got him to an NFC championship, and he was 6 months older than Aaron Rodgers is today. That was Brett Favre wasn't falling apart. He had just had a great year. They had just gone 13-3. He had just made the Pro Bowl. He had just cranked up a great year, and they moved off him. Why? Because they saw him as expensive and a star that was increasingly needy. That's kind of what Green Bay sees. It's funny how it lands. So Green Bay has always been about development. We all know this. This is not new. It's very small. It's the smallest sports town in America. It's got that Midwestern small town ethos. They're almost cynical about money and stardom. They're kind of cynical, right? Like when the Wisconsin Badgers hired, you know, Bo Ryan, the basketball coach, they hired him from right down the road. They didn't go for big stars. They had all the money. Wisconsin had all the money. If you go look at the history of Wisconsin football in the last 20 years, they make a ton of money. It's one of the most lucrative athletic departments in the country. They never hire a big star as a coach. They never do. They're cynical of the big money. Not that it's jaded. That's just the way Wisconsin is. They got their cheese. They got their Packers. We don't need outsiders. We're homegrown. We develop. It's Midwest. It's our ethos. And here's rock star Brett Favre and rock star Aaron Rodgers. So they draft Jordan Love, obviously. You don't draft a quarterback in the first round, not play him. It'd be just a total waste of draft pick. But it's funny how it lands. It's a weird fit between Aaron and the Packers. And if you read this story, basically, you know, they don't want to offend Aaron, but they're structuring this contract to move off it sooner than later. And it's interesting how it lands. For Aaron Rodgers, whenever you get in an argument with your wife or your husband, the first thing a psychologist taught me this years ago, he said, well, just make sure it lands for her like it lands for you. You may have an argument it doesn't necessarily land the same way. Arguments don't. So for Aaron Rodgers, here's how the current situation lands. You can't get many good players. For Green Bay, here's how it lands. Well, we would like to get you more, but you're too expensive, and you're getting older, and you're kind of needy. And both could be right. Aaron can't get more stars. That's why when they play Tampa this year and go 0-2, it looks like Tampa has far more good players. Brady takes a pay cut. That's why when they played San Francisco a couple years ago and Garoppolo wasn't making a fortune, it looked like San Francisco had way more good players. So how does it land? For Aaron Rodgers, this whole thing lands like, you can't get me more good players. You can't even keep my center. You couldn't keep Jared Cook. I can't get J.J. Watt. And for Green Bay, they look at it and think, dude, we're building this developmental roster, making fifth rounders Pro Bowlers. We would love to get you more players, but you cost us almost $35 million a year. We're doing our part. You're not sacrificing. We're not going out and overspending and making it easy and getting free agents. We're not cherry picking like the Giants, Adoree Jackson and Kenny Galladay, or like the Jets, Carl Lawson and Corey Davis. We don't do that. So we have to sacrifice in Green Bay. We are sacrificing Aaron all the time. It's a small town. This is our ethos. We have to draft and develop. And you, a big contract guy, are getting in our way. And so, I mean, Tom Brady's cap hit this year is $28 million less than Aaron Rodgers. That's why they have an all-star team. So this whole thing is very interesting to me, is that when they moved off Brett Favre, he had Aaron Rodgers. He was 13-3. He would just turn 38. He was a Pro Bowler. He had his best year in a decade, just like Aaron did. And they just said, you're expensive and you're needy. And the whole thing in Green Bay is they look to develop. It's almost a college team. And they look like, well, we developed Favre. He was lost in Atlanta, kind of a mess personally. And we developed Aaron Rodgers, who had to go to a junior college. And now a Jordan Love from Utah State. This is what we do. We develop. We don't get the big free agents, Aaron. And now you're really expensive. And we're doing the best we can, but we can't get great players now. Maybe the conference championship, that's what we can do. Because Green Bay's not stupid. They know the more you pay a quarterback, the less you can win. You can't win Super Bowls with an expensive quarterback. Doesn't happen. Hasn't happened in years. Hasn't happened in 15 years. Very funny. So just look at the story today on Aaron Rodgers. It's not real subtle. It looks like they're giving him bonuses because they don't want to get trapped in 2 to 3 years with Aaron's contract. So this is funny. So the Bucs are going to now sign Ndamukong Suh. And now yesterday, Donovan Smith reached an agreement, $32 million contract for their left tackle. So they have now signed Chris Godwin, franchised him, Donovan Smith, Shaq Barrett, Levante David, Rob Gronkowski, Ryan Suckup, a kicker, and now Ndamukong Suh is going to get $9 million a year. This is the most talented team Tom Brady's ever played on. Go look at mock drafts. Every other team in the NFL is drafting for need. Even the well-run teams like the Colts need a speed receiver. The Chiefs need an interior offensive lineman or a tackle. Everybody's drafting for need except Tampa. They're just drafting for depth. Literally, people are like, they're going to take an interior defensive lineman. Well, they have Ndamukong Suh. Well, they need a linebacker in case Levante David doesn't sign the way he did. Well, outside pass rusher, Shaq Barrett signed too. And Donovan Smith. If you go back to the 2007 Patriots, that Randy Moss team that went undefeated, they had 8 Pro Bowlers, 3 on the offensive line. Now, they had Randy Moss, but that wide receiving core is not close to Tampa's. They had Mike Vrabel, but that linebacking core in New England is not close to as athletic as Tampa's. Well, they had Vince Wilfork. They did. But this defensive line is far greater as a unit than that defensive line. The only area that New England team is better than the Tampa team is offensive line. And I would make a strong argument that the offensive line for Tampa in the last 2 months was unbelievable. Ali Marpet is a top 3 guard in the league. Ryan Jensen's a top 6 to 7 center. Tristan Wirfs, right tackle, looks like a Pro Bowler. That's the weak spot of Tampa. This is the best team Tom Brady's ever played on. They are literally drafting for depth. And don't forget this. They got really good after the bye. and I kind of look at Tampa as two seasons. There was the Tom gets signed, no preseason, a lot of turbulence, kind of trying to fit Arians' offense with Brady's offense. And we all watched it on television. It was bumpy. They got crushed by the Saints twice. They got beat by the Bears. They're yelling at each other. It's a lot of ugliness. Then the bye hit. They got 10 days of practice. They sewed it together. And from that point on, 8-0, and the average score was 34-19, and it was the number one offense in the NFL. They are literally drafting for depth. That is it. So that bye was like their preseason. It's incredible right now. Their sack differential after the bye was number one. Their wins were number one. Their points were number one. Their point differential was number one. Their turnover differential was number two. That's the team coming back for preseason next year. That's the team entering this season. This team is so stacked. And I will say this. The other break they get is the Saints will be worse. Drew Brees is gone. They had to shave cap. Green Bay could not take their Pro Bowl center, could not get him or J.J. Watt. Probably not quite as good on the offensive line. They do a good job in Green Bay to develop offensive lines, but probably won't be as good as when you lose the best center in the game or the second best center, you're probably not going to be as good. Seattle's been noisy as heck. Dallas still can't figure out their defense. I mean, this is the best team they've ever been on. They're going to re-sign Ndamukong Suh. And Donovan Smith got $31 million. They are completely stacked. I mean, the weakness on this team last year was offensive line. It was dominant in the end of the year and secondary, mostly because it was young. Also, this is a franchise that drafts incredibly well, so you might as well put three or four more really talented guys on this roster. Wow. Zion Williamson's going crazy. We love that. Mac Jones, good Lord. Mel Kiper's got to slow down on this. Mac Jones ain't going to work, folks. It's not going to work. You just got to come to terms with it. It's not going to work. That's coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
What's up, everyone? It's me, three-time NFL All-Pro Sean Marino, and I have a new sports podcast called The Lights Out Podcast with Sean Marino. This podcast is special to me as I get a chance to talk to some of the best who've ever done it on the field or the track. So whether it's talking to a Super Bowl champion or a NASCAR Cup Series champion, The Lights Out Podcast will bring it to you the only way I know how to. I'm giving you the best insight from the best who've ever done it. Listen to Lights Out with Sean Marino on the iHeartRadio app, or wherever you can get your podcast.
Save big on your water and energy bills with Navien tankless water heaters. Make it easy to go tankless. Endless hot water for spa-like comfort. Visit tanklessmadesimple.com, tanklessmadesimple.com. In the NFL, how you score, it doesn't really matter. If you get into the end zone, makes you happy with your fantasy team. It doesn't matter that Derrick Henry runs one way and Aaron Jones the other. They both get into the end zone. Okay, they're both really good players. It just doesn't really matter in terms of how you get there. Brady's never been the most dynamic player, but he's the best quarterback. But in the NBA, it's different. How you score is going to get you the shoe deal. How you score is how the league is going to put you on television. Karl Malone was boring. Sean Kemp was riveting. So Sean Kemp became a big star. And I had personal demons, but like 80% of Karl Malone's points were free throws or a boring pick and roll. Same with John Stockton. Isaiah Thomas was much more clever. Magic, the big smile. So if you look at the history of the NBA, who the biggest stars have been, it's not always been the best players. It's how they score. Magic Johnson was so unique. Larry Bird was the best shooting, best passing forward in the history of the game when he arrived. Then it was Michael, who was glamorous and good-looking and cool. There's been a lot of great players. Shaq, Steph Curry, you become the face of the league. That's what Zion Williamson has. Giannis, Kawhi, Anthony Davis, Chris Paul, they'll give you a quiet 26. Zion's is a loud 25. It is memorable. It is Sean Kemp. It is loud. And right now, last night, they beat the Lakers. Zion's great. Do you know through 65 games in the last 40 years, the only player that scored more points was Michael Jordan. He's literally getting into Wilt and Michael Jordan territory. And right now, through 65 games, he has more points than LeBron did through 65 games. He's got more rebounds than LeBron did through 65 games. He's got a higher field goal percentage than LeBron did. He's got a higher three-point percentage than LeBron did. And LeBron was pretty good. LeBron dropped 40 multiple times in his rookie year. So the way you play in the NBA will determine a lot. It's not like that in soccer. It's not like that in baseball. Nobody cares. Get guys out, win 20 games, you win a Cy Young. But basketball is not. How do you score? And frankly, Zion, to me, now that LeBron's out for a month, he's the number one TV product. It's Steph and him. Those are the guys I rush to a TV to watch. And there is a – you get power, you get strength, you get forcefulness, you get all these really important things all jammed into one. Had Sean Kemp had a better personal life, Sean Kemp would have been a massive NBA star for 20 years. But he had his, you know, personal foibles, and, you know, don't we all? But when I watch Zion, I mean, his critics now look ridiculous. He is just must-see television. He is the face of the league that LeBron's hurt. It's nothing against Giannis or AD or Chris Paul. It's nothing against these guys. They're all great players, or Kawhi. But they're not necessarily great television products. And that, in more than any league, that matters. Joy Taylor with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Jameis Winston spent most of his time on the bench watching Drew Brees last season, but now that Brees is retired, the path is open for him to win that starting spot, and he got emotional talking about how much of an impact Brees had on him in his 1 year together with him.
He doesn't even know how much he means to me and my family, for real. I love football. That's all I've done my entire life, and someone that I look up to, that I admire, that I actually could touch, was my teammate, and I had a chance to serve him. Like, man, I'm speechless to that. Like, that really gets me emotional, because I really love Drew Brees. Like, I don't think he understands.
I have this thing about grown men crying. It always makes me cry. I thought that was really nice. Like, we watched Jameis, obviously, in college and through many ups and downs in his career. And, you know, one of the great things about sports is that when you do have a talent and, you know, we want to give people second chances. And I think he's gotten a great opportunity to learn from one of the best to ever do it. A teammate that everyone speaks that way about. We've seen other retirement ceremonies where people retire. They're not going to play with Drew Brees anymore, and they cry about not being able to play with Drew Brees anymore.
Oh, I think we've seen like four guys cry.
Yeah.
About Drew Brees, offensive lineman. No, I mean, that's how he touched people.
Yeah, and that shows the impact that he has. But I mean, we also talked to Taysom Hill at the Super Bowl last year. We had him on set back when we could do that, and he was talking about how like what it is like to learn the process that Drew Brees does. Like, there's something to being said. Like, the guys always say, like, oh, he's the first one there, he's the first one to leave. Like, we kind of throw that out a lot. But, like, are you literally the first one there and the last one to leave at your job? Like, probably not. And he doesn't get extra money because he does that. Now, listen, he's compensated very well, but he doesn't have to do that. Like, that was something that people always said about Kobe. Like, Kobe is in the gym. If he tells you that he's working out with you, you need to get there 2 hours early, because he's going to be an hour early or 2 hours early, and you don't want to get to the gym after Kobe gets to the gym.
Right.
So there's something to learning from an all-time great, and obviously the talent doesn't transfer, but learning the process of how to do something does transfer into longevity.
No question.
And that you are what you habitually do.
Yeah.
So if you're learning from somebody who does things well habitually and that rubs off on you, that can help your career. But I do see Jameis as the starter there next
so
season.
I.
So Mac Jones had a strong showing at his Alabama Pro Day yesterday. Reps from all 32 NFL teams were in attendance to watch him. Jones wasn't that impressed with his performance, saying he could have thrown it better and was frustrated with the few that he missed. But Daniel Jeremiah reported that he thought Jones had a solid workout, describing him as smooth, comfortable, and poised. I know you are very...
I don't want to be a negative guy. I don't think he... I don't want to get too much into, you know, he was a little faster than people thought. I just don't think, like, if you're a trust fund kid, that you're going to struggle in your life if you get into chaotic situations and you have to overcome stuff, because you're not built to overcome it. There's a reason none of these Alabama quarterbacks work. They never trail. Mac Jones didn't trail in the second half of any game he played last year. Oh, by the way, he never got hit. Oh, by the way, his receivers are wide open. Oh, by the way, he always had a better game plan. I'm not saying you can't work, but you start looking at what works in the NFL. What should really happen, because the best quarterbacks go to the biggest schools. If it was just that easy, this linear process, that USC always has a top five quarterback, so does Clemson, so does Alabama, so does Ohio State, so does Oklahoma, then why, when you look around the NFL, are the quarterbacks starring in this league from Texas Tech and Purdue? Because those experiences collegiately ready you for the chaos you'll deal with in the NFL. Alabama's a trust fund kid. You're walking in, it's like, oh, I've never trailed in a football game with 8 minutes to go, and everybody in the world knows I have to pass, and I have a bad O-line. You never experience. Matt Ryan didn't throw to a single NFL player at Boston College. So by the time he got to the NFL, it's like, yeah, my windows are small. Nobody was ever wide open. Everybody for Mac Jones is wide open, and I just don't think it translates. That's why Alabama quarterbacks are great in college and don't do anything in the NFL. Look at Tua.
That was my question about Tua. And then when you get the scout on him, that he's a rhythm quarterback and everything is kind of have to be on schedule.
Yes.
What happened in the Super Bowl with what everyone agrees with is the best quarterback talent in the league currently, with Patrick Mahomes, when things fell apart? He couldn't make it happen. And he was flying sideways, flipping it backwards, and still hitting people in the helmet, and he couldn't get it done. So there's no way that you can translate not having any kind of adversity to the NFL. Like, we've seen it. Like, what Alabama quarterback has worked? Now, clock's still on Tua, but I'm not a believer as of yet.
Right.
I don't want to be down on Mac Jones either, but I was never high on Mac Jones throughout the season. So yeah. It's not, I don't expect him to make this big jump. And that's not to say that he's not going to have an NFL career. There are plenty of quarterbacks like this who need to be on schedule, who need things to be perfect, who have great careers as backups.
By the way, what if he goes to San Francisco in that run-centric offense and gets Kyle Shanahan? He's going to succeed in the NFL.
Look, this is the knock on Jared Goff, that he needs everything to be perfect. Right. And look, Jared Goff got to a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So Draymond Green got everybody upset yesterday. The Warriors are not in the playoff picture for the West right now, but he is still very confident. And this week he raised eyebrows when he talked about where he thinks he ranks as an all-time elite defender.
I think I'm the best defender to ever play this game in NBA.
Do you?
That's my 100%. That's my opinion. You know, when I look at all the facets that make up the defensive side of the ball, I think I'm great in every facet that makes up that side of the ball. And so I think I'm the best defender to ever play in the NBA. And I stand by that. I'll put myself up against anyone.
I don't know. I will say this. It is harder to – people think it's easier to defend today. The game's softer. I'd argue it's harder to defend now because wing guys, bigs, can shoot threes. It used to be you just had to wait to the big and the wing, like the forward, would just come to you. Now you got to go to him. So I think it is – and by the way, bigs now can dribble. Giannis dribbles.
Well, there's definitely – everyone is much more
athletic.
Skilled.
Yes. No question.
Eccentric and comes into the league more skilled for those reasons. And a lot of that has to do with the team that he's on and Steph Curry stretching the court the way that he does. I mean, you could argue both sides. You could say it was harder to defend back in the day because players were much more physical. And then you could argue that defenders had an advantage because you could really foul somebody and they were not really calling fouls the way that they are now.
I feel like if I was an NBA defender, I would rather defend a guy in the 80s and 90s. If I was a big, tough Charles Oakley guy, you're going to come to me in the post, and if I'm a big, strong guy...
Yeah, you can maul you.
Okay. Now, if I'm Charles Oakley, I have to run out to the perimeter and guard him there, too. And oh, by the way, he's a really good ball handler now. So I do think Draymond's argument is, look at what I have to defend now. These are... By the way, the game's now much more European, so we're getting the world's best players, not Marquette's.
Well, I mean, I don't like the idea that just because something's new, it can't be the best. Right. There is this addiction to the old school, especially when it comes to sports. And we romanticize past eras as thinking that they're better when in fact they're maybe just different. So something can be the best, even though it is right now. Like Steph Curry can be the best shooter and 3-point shooter of all time and still be playing right now.
Yeah.
You don't have to make the argument for a guy that played 30 years ago just out of like respect for the game. But I do think when you say yourself that you are the best at something that people take a lot of pride in,
people
you're
going to
get pushback, right, like from Charles Oakley or Tony Allen. And then you're going to talk about, you know, Hakeem Olajuwon, excuse me, Dikembe Mutombo, Ben Wallace. Like, you're going to start getting, you're going to start putting yourself on lists. And then you're going to make the center of the argument. Now, Draymond probably doesn't care, which is why he said that, because he knows what people are going to react to. But it is kind of a fun debate, like who you rank. Because immediately I was like, Tony Allen? I don't know about all that.
He's top five. I don't have a problem. I don't think he is anymore, but I think in his peak, about 4 years ago, he was. To be honest with you, I think LeBron James is top two or three. I think Michael Jordan.
Oh, obviously Michael.
Michael and LeBron are both great defenders. Yeah. Now, Bird and Magic weren't.
But Michael took pride in being good on the defensive side.
He was a great on-ball defender. Yeah. He was. I mean, you literally can find like one piece of video from Iverson where he got beat. I mean, that's good when they find the one guy that crossed you up. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line
Nick
News.
Wright, co-host First Things First, now joining me as he does every Wednesday. Brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. So the Aaron Rodgers story today is pretty interesting. Is that without confusing the audience, they basically gave him a check and they didn't want to rework it for cap space, meaning we drafted a quarterback and, you know, they don't want to offend Aaron. But I was saying this, people forget that when the Packers moved off Favre, they were 13-3. They got to an NFC championship. He had his best year in a decade and he was a Pro Bowler. That Green Bay is almost cynical toward money and stardom. That's not what they do. They develop players. They take great. It's the Midwest small town ethos. You're a Midwest guy, and Kansas City thinks that. Green Bay doubles and triples down on it. And I look at it and I think it's not hard to figure out here. They're moving off Aaron fairly quickly. This is not a real debate, right?
Yeah, and that's why, despite nearly 30 uninterrupted years of Favre and Rodgers, they have been to three Super Bowls and won two. Because they have squandered and all they have been more worried about staying good than being great. And Rodgers is going to continue to feel, call it anxious, if not a little paranoid, but it's not paranoid if they're actually out to get you, as long as Jordan Love's on that roster, Colin. And so, listen, if I were advising Brian Gutekunst, I would say, listen, man, maybe Jordan Love's going to be the next Aaron Rodgers, but more likely than not, he's just going to bounce around the league as a fringe starter. That's usually what happens with late first-round pick quarterbacks.
Yeah.
So here's what you should do. You should trade him to a team like, I don't know, Atlanta for their second-round pick. You should use your first-round pick and trade for Odell Beckham Jr. You should go out in free agency and, I don't know, bring back a guy like Casey Hayward, who you probably never should have let go to the Chargers. And you should go all in right now because you're 26-6 the last 2 years. You're in back-to-back NFC championship games, and you're very close. And it is over. Staying good is overrated, and being great for a short period of time is underrated. Your beloved Tampa Bay Bucks understand that. They are mortgaging all of the mid-2020s for the right now, as they should. The Packers need to take a page out of that book, Colin.
I was saying this to start the show, is that I follow mock drafts. Everybody's into something, right? And I follow them. Tampa's the only team that is not addressing a need. They're literally drafting for depth. People are like, well, defensive line, if Ndamukong Suh doesn't come back, oh, he is. I mean, literally, they're just drafting for depth, maybe a running back. I said this morning, the only New England team close to this was 2007. They had 8 Pro Bowlers, but 3 on the offensive line. This is the most talented team Brady's ever played on. I mean, I honestly think that this morning.
I understand why you think that. I also think we are being a little reactionary to the Super Bowl as opposed to the entirety of Tampa's playoff run, where they were up 5 points against Washington in the fourth quarter, and Washington had the football against Taylor Heinicke before Heinicke got hurt. They were, in my opinion, struggling mightily against the Saints until Drew Brees really, unfortunately, in the final half of his career, melted down, and the Packers had every opportunity to beat them. I respect and appreciate what Tampa's doing. I think they're doing the right thing. I think they should be doubling down. But I also think you are relying on a lot of older and aging players, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, to get through another year as healthy as they did last year. I know Vita Vea got hurt, and have the same level of production. So I'm not criticizing their offseason, but I think Tampa's going to go into the year big-time favorites to get back to and win the Super Bowl, and that's not a bet I'm willing to make, even though as we sit here right now at the end of March, they do look loaded. And I've got to give Jason Light, their GM, credit. I didn't think they'd ever be able to keep all their top free agents, and they've kept all their top free agents, and we'll see if they're interested in keeping AB.
You know, we were saying this, that every year in the draft, there is a player in the NFL draft that just doesn't look like a college player. Chase Young. Just draft him. Quentin Nelson. You can't draft a guard that high. He's the best guard in the league by a second year. Kyle Pitts at Florida. Zion was like that. Zion didn't look like a college athlete. Zion, you know, in the NBA, most college kids come in, they get thinner because the travel, the sleep, they're struggling to keep weight on young players. Zion looks like he's been in an NBA weight room for 15 years. Are you even a little surprised at how dominant a scorer he's become?
I'm a little, listen, you and I were as high on Zion as anybody, as any two people in America. You and I both said when he was at Duke, he right at Duke was a top 25 NBA player. Yeah. He just wasn't in the NBA yet. And, pardon me, folks were worried about his weight. They were worried about all this foolishness. And it's like, well, he's just stronger and can jump higher than anybody I've ever seen. And that seems to be useful in the NBA. I think he's going to be okay. What I am surprised about is that he is scoring at this level at 60% from the field. We've never, and by the way, the biggest criticism with the Pelicans, and I like Stan Van Gundy, but they need to have, and Brandon Ingram had a really good game last night. I think he had 36. It was a good revenge game for him against the Lakers. But they need to have a come to Jesus moment and make sure Brandon Ingram knows this ain't your team, man. Because I'm sick, honestly, I'm sick of seeing Zion Williamson went 9 for 13. He needs to be going 12 for 21. He so many times you look at the box score, it's like, oh, Zion had 26 points on 11 shots. And so I'm a little surprised they're not letting things run through him more often.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons that they've had some late game failures. And I'm also a little surprised that nobody has been able to slow him down. Like, I thought he'd be a 20-point-a-game guy immediately. I didn't think it would be at what is record-breaking efficiency.
Yeah. So LeBron's second big injury in 3 years. He is older. Maybe it's just a coincidence. But I've seen this before. He does now. He doesn't have quite the stamina. The bubble was great for him, 4.5 months off. He looked like a completely different player defensively in the bubble last year. He was more rested. He's human. What do you make of the injury? Where does it sit with you? Is it the sign of age that Brady hasn't quite shown yet?
Oh, if it would have been another soft tissue injury like the groin, then I'd walk down that path with you more readily. This to me was, you know, a guy rolls into his leg, you look at it, and I think, and Brandon Marshall said this on Monday, and he's right, I think for most guys, this is a torn ACL. If you look at how his knee flexes, I think LeBron was pretty lucky to get out of this with just a high ankle sprain. What it means for the Lakers is, when he comes back, they're going to be in 7th or 8th place.
Right.
And I don't know how much they care about standings. They won the title last year with zero home games, so I don't think they have to worry about not having home court. But they are going to have to grind at the end of the year, because until AD comes back, with no LeBron and no AD, that's a bad roster. But Colin, can I just throw something at you? Because I think you'll enjoy. Because you saw what happened after he got hurt, right?
Right.
So he gets hurt, and he has 7 points. At that point, he had scored 10 points in 1,035 consecutive games, longest streak in NBA history by a mile. They call timeout to take him out. And methinks LeBron knew he had 7 points and said, guys, I think I got one more shot in me. Because he went back in the game, hit his one and only shot at corner three to get to 10 points. Then they called another timeout, and now he's out a month. So I'm not saying that was a higher degree of difficulty and more clutch shot than Jordan's against Utah. All I am saying is that was game six that Jordan did his. They were going to have a game seven even if he missed. LeBron was going to be, it was a streak over. He's been working on the streak since 2007. And he nails it. So I'm just saying, just add that to the little legacy bar. He suffers his second injury ever, has the self-awareness, I need to hit a three to get to 10 points. I can do that even though I basically have a broken leg. It's like Tiger at the Masters. Broken leg, still can do it.
I won't make that leap, but I think it is a fascinating point made by Nick Wright.
It's what people are saying. I'm hearing it. It's what I'm hearing. I'm hearing it's more. It's like the Ray Allen shot, the Michael Jordan shot, and LeBron's three in the corner against the Hawks in the second quarter in March. I think that's the list.
All right. If that's how it lands for you, it makes me happy. Nick Wright, first things first. Pleasure to see you, buddy. I do appreciate it. Coming up next.
Talk to you later.
Coming up next. Joy and I were talking about this. So we all know, right? There are good pilots. You think when you get on a plane, it's a capable pilot. But there are better pilots. Sully landed on water. Not every pilot can do that. It's the same in the NFL with the cap. Some people work the cap, and a lot of teams get worked by the cap. And I'll give you a great example of this. It's got to be discouraging for people in Chicago. Listen.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
What's up, everyone? It's me, three-time NFL All-Pro Sean Merriman, and I have a new sports podcast called The Lights Out Podcast with Sean Merriman. This podcast is special to me as I get a chance to talk to some of the best who've ever done it on the field or the track. So whether it's talking to a Super Bowl champion or a NASCAR Cup Series champion, The Lights Out Podcast will bring it to you the only way I know how to. I'm giving you the best insight from the best who've ever done it. Listen to Lights Out with Sean Merriman on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcast.
Black Rifle Coffee, veteran-owned coffee company, serves premium coffee to people who love America. Check it out, blackriflecoffee.com/herd, 20% off your first coffee club order. So Joy went to the dentist for 3 hours this past week. I went yesterday, and it is amazing. I fell into a dentist. I got recommended. My dentist is amazing. The gap between good dentist and average dentist is a mile. I have gone to dentists for my whole life, like all of you, and a cleaning can be painful. I could have now a cavity replaced. I could do this show while he's doing it. He's so good. The lasers, his staff, the equipment, the intelligence. He always gives me, you know, kind of a lecture on what to do with your mouth and how it's tied to your stomach. He's just better than every other dentist, and it's not particularly close. And yesterday they're doing doing their stuff, and I'm just sitting there thinking, this is like the Dubai Emirates Airlines of airlines. Like, you can shower on it. You can watch movies. They have a gym. It's like, you know, but it's funny about this in the NFL. We all know there's great coaching staffs, and then there's average coaching staffs. We all know that. We know clearly there are great scouting departments, Saints, and then there are not great scouting departments. This works with the cap, too. The salary cap is very confusing, but some teams, think about the Saints. The Saints have gone from $100 million over the cap to cap compliant in 3 weeks. Why? Because they got a guy named Kai Harley, who is supposed to be a genius. So this guy named Kai Harley with the Saints, he's a master. It's just he manipulates the cap, and most of the league gets manipulated by the cap. And I'll give you a great example. Tampa's re-signing everybody. It's an all-star team. Donovan Smith, Chris Godwin, Brady, Gronk, Shaq Barrett, Lamonte David. These are like elite players. They Chicago, though, and one of the reasons Tampa could do it is, well, they don't pay Brady anything. Well, Chicago doesn't pay Andy Dalton anything. Chicago pays one skill person, Allen Robinson. They don't pay their quarterback anything. They don't pay their offensive line much. They don't pay their tight end anything. They don't pay their backs much. And they had to let go of their best corner, Kyle Fuller. And by the way, not only did Chicago let him go, there's a $9 million dead cap hit for it. They don't know what they're doing. Chicago's front office does not know what they're doing. They had to let go of their best secondary player. Why? They're not paying Andy Dalton anything. They weren't paying Mitch Trubisky anything. Why? They don't know what they're doing. So, I mean, Tampa, literally, they're stacked in defensive line. They're stacked at wide receiver. They're stacked at tight end. They're gifted in the secondary. They're loaded at edge rush. They have a Pro Bowl kicker. It's just, it's the reality. You could give two families $100 and say, get food. And one family with $100 could get enough food for a week. And another family would buy gummy bears and Lunchables, and by Tuesday, no food for the kids. Like, some people don't know how to work a budget. Some people don't know how to work a kitchen. Some people don't know how to buy groceries. You go to the grocery store, you've been behind somebody, you're like, his bill's 80, and that stuff's out in 3 days. And then you watch the person that comes up with vegetables, and they've gone green, and it's produce, and you're like, that you could feed a family for 7-8 days with that. It's the same in the NFL. Chicago doesn't know what they're doing. If Andy Dalton's your quarterback and you're paying him $10 million and you have to let go of your best corner and it's a $9 million dead cap hit, get a new capologist. I got a new dentist. It's not that hard. It's a couple of calls. Hour two, coming up next.